You are about to experience Vegas Bad Boys of podcasting. Fortunately, you are about to hear lots of opinions, but rarely any facts. Impersonation might occur, but good luck trying to figure them out. This program is not intended for kids or the easily offended. Listener discretion is advised. You have been warned. You press play. It's too late to stop. Get ready to podcast.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to another edition of Vegas Bad Boys of Podcasting. I'm your host, DJ Impact, and I got the Bad Boys here with me. We welcome everybody for joining us at this moment. If you're watching us live at any time, just send a chat through and we will try to get that through as we talk about tonight's wrestling talk. So, you know, with that, we're going to get to it, fellas. It's good to see you guys here. It's wrestling talk time. WWE Raw, Royal Rumble's coming up in a week. I mean, are you guys liking what you're seeing so far? What do you think of Raw? Let's go.
Conor McGregor just totally was horrible.
Okay. that wasn't Raw, but...
But he was horrible.
Well, you know what? His face looked pretty raw after that fight.
Yeah, I mean, did any of you guys catch it? Catch the fight? The
UFC?
Yeah.
Or Raw?
Well, the real fight. Come on, man.
I mean, I caught pieces of it. I'm not really interested.
Okay.
It really wasn't a catchable fight because it wasn't really.
Yeah. It was pretty quick, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
It was really quick, man.
Which is crazy because everyone, including I was watching Stephen A. Smith earlier in the day, and he put all his money on like Connor. So I was like, you know, and I didn't know the other guy. So I guess Connor's gonna win. And then I started seeing the notifications come through that he got his ass whooped. I'm like, okay, that's must be shocking to everyone.
It makes you wonder too, in those scenarios, mm-hmm. when you have such a difference in betting, mm-hmm. if
yeah.
There's no commission to say that Connor didn't go through channels to bet on the other guy and made a fucking ton more money.
That's true, right?
By throwing the fight.
Yeah, because you can't buy, you can't bet on UFC, right? Like,
yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. That would have been nice. Shout out to a couple of people joining in. Ringsiders, Lori, we see you. Thank you for joining in. Okay, Raw, what did you guys think? You know? Bliss is still doing blissful things. I mean, what's your guys' take?
I want to touch on that. I'm glad you brought her
what
up.
What you got, man?
I'm going to tell you right now, and I know we know because we've talked about it in the past, Alexa Bliss is a gem. And it's not just so much of what she's doing with this character. It lets you, it reminds you that when we bring up names in the WWE of elite in the women's division, you do have to bring up Alexa Bliss. It's been a while since I've seen her in ring in this fashion. She looked good. You know what I mean? She looked good.
Mm-hmm.
And it made me want to see her more. And with this added persona she has of the Fiend, because I guess she let the Fiend in her. No pun intended. But, you know, she said, let me in. So she let him in. So I don't know if it's possession or whatever the case, but I like it. And it reminds me, Alexa Bliss is amazing in the ring, and wherever the hell this goes, I hope she gets a shot. She is getting a shot, but I'm just saying, I mean, I hope that she gets more time doing this. I was happy to see it. I'll just leave it at that.
Well, you gotta also kind of tip your hat at the fact that they have been using the non-fan venue very smartly.
Mm-hmm.
True.
It's really hard. You couldn't do something like that
True.
With fans there. But this, you know, the other thing it does too is when you're talking about a 3-hour show, there's certain moments that you have to try to engage the audience back to watching. And if that match is going on and then something happens where it changes, your eyes will catch that. And all of a sudden you're paying attention again. Mm-hmm. And that's a great technique. They've done some smart things. This has been wonderful. I also love the fact that all of a sudden Randy Orton is now a luchador. like his face was burned so badly that he had to put on a Rey Mysterio mask. That's it.
The best part about the mask is that there was a hole cut for the nose, and it's obviously the thing that's sticking out from his face the furthest. So yeah. Chances are that would be the thing that would be burned the worst as well. So come on.
And they just put X amount of makeup on there, like not even burn makeup,
but right?
Just enough to light it so that it looks like his nose has been somewhat affected by something. But for all we know, he has eczema. You know, it's not like burns. But you know, it's different. I mean, I never thought I'd see Randy Orton with his face covered. That's
no,
yeah.
Are they gonna start calling him quemado? It's just burned in Spanish. Is that what we're going to call him since he has a luchador mask on? Quemado.
Well, we might have the Spanish viper.
Is there a Spanish viper? I'm going to look that shit up. Is there a Spanish viper? That shit would be cool.
Whatever the word for a viper is in Spanish. There you go.
You know what kind of sucks? With that luchador mask on, I did think of like traditional Bane, like luchador Bane from DC Comics.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree 100% on that. That was one of the first. The funniest thing that you say that is, I thought it without thinking it.
Mm-hmm.
That you said that, it's like, yeah, that's exactly what I was seeing in my mind. I just didn't, you know, fully visualize that. Interesting. Again, it's interesting.
Yeah. And I want him to have the deep voice too. Like, El Batman, I come get you now. You know, some shit like that would be amazing.
No, that guy is the best man at the wedding coming up. It's very interesting that they've been able to do all of this stuff while still keeping Bray off TV.
Right. That's a good point.
Yeah.
That's a very good point. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But you know, that's the thing, and I don't want to go too deep on it, but that's the difference when you have such a good character. The character of the Fiend is something that can even transcend who's going to be the embodiment of it. And I think they've proven that, I mean, I hope, unless you haven't been paying attention, that the Fiend is more than just what is the embodiment of Bray Wyatt. The Fiend is an entity, and it is now inside of Alexa Bliss. And I hate to say it like that because it really does sound sexually dirty, but I'm being honest. You know, he says, let me in, and she let him in. And now he is a part of her, it seems.
Speaking about letting in, are we going to see a Ric Flair Lacey tape anytime soon?
Oh, my gosh. Woo!
Right.
You know, the funniest thing about this is that he's a 71-year-old man, and yet, as a wrestling fan, you've been built up to believe Ric Flair is such a womanizing ladies' man, you know, four horsemen-esque. This history and story, it just makes you go, well, yeah, of course Lacey would go after him. He's Ric Flair. And then you're like, wait a minute, man. He's like my grandpa's age or my dad's age.
Like, but it's not that unimaginable, though. I mean, I'd be real with you. I know some guys that's, you know, up there 60, 70 with young 30-year-old women. And I mean, I guess their drip is still has no expiration date because they pulling females.
Nice.
Once again, I don't ever want to hear the words drip.
Drip is a term. I'm going to explain it to you later, man. I'm going to explain to you later what that is, man. I'm just saying,
when you say drip coming out of your mouth.
No, I didn't say drip coming out. First of all, I didn't say drip coming out of my mouth. That just sounds bad. You hear what you just said?
I know what I just said.
Oh, man.
My dumb ass repeated it.
Anything else you guys enjoyed off of Raw? Maybe the AJ Styles, Ricochet match there, you know,
amazing match.
Yeah,
yeah, it was good. That was a really solid match. I mean, it's one of those things where if you actually give AJ Styles and Ricochet some time and you take some of the restraints off, these guys could be main eventing your shows. I think Ricochet has been criminally underused. I've talked about it for months.
Yeah.
And I really would love to see them do something with Ricochet after the Rumble. I mean, obviously he's not going to be in the Rumble now as part of the stipulation of this match, but I don't know, man. I don't know.
I think that, you know, at some point, and I'm surprised Vince hasn't done it already, that they change him to Rick O'Shea and have him an Irish wrestler, you know, dissenting of the McMahon family. And that would get him over in Vince's mind. It would kill him,
you know, everywhere else.
But Vince would be happy with it. You could bring back Hornswoggle.
I mean, when you are writing the show for an audience of one, I mean, sure.
Right.
But that's, you know, it's funny because as we talk about Raw and we find ourselves weekly going, there's just not a lot to talk about. The reason I don't write that stuff down is I want to see if there's anything I remember, because I think that's the important thing, the stuff that is memorable that week. And what I find on a regular basis is it's not only just the lag of being, you know, almost a full week since you watch it to when we talk about it, but there's not that much that sticks in your mind from what you're seeing. And that's the problem they need to figure out. They're good to go.
Now, let me ask you that question, because I thought of the same thing. But I also think back of when we were younger and we were watching wrestle. All right. And we were talking about Monday Night Raw. And let's say back then the day when it was 2 hours and it was the big shit. We seem to remember what happened. But then again, there's not as nearly as much wrestling to watch as there is today. Let's be honest. Do you think that's a factor?
I ask you this. Outside of those moments where, you know, Vince or Austin, The Rock Austin, you know, giving birth to a hand, the Katie Vick stuff, you know, there's specific instances. Now, put that stuff aside. Do you remember anything really about other things that were happening on the show at that time? That's the thing. The what we glorify in our memory happens to be all the big shit, right? And that's what fans want to see. They want to see this, you know, well, Raw and WCW, Nitro, they were in the competition, the Monday Night Wars, et cetera, et cetera.
Fear.
You had it SmackDown in. And in Thunder, you know, you had a nice amount of wrestling to watch. The difference is we are 20 years removed, so we tend to glorify that era. But the truth is, you had some, I mean, can you remember that Draws was part of Legion of Doom when Animal, you know, took him in after Hawk, you know, do you remember Hawk climbed to the top of the Titantron? In a drunken attempt to commit suicide or something. You know?
I remember there was an angle a lot like that. And I remember they did add someone to the Legion of Doom. I do remember that. And I was kind of like, oh, that's weird.
And that was Draws, Draws before, you know, he got the injury. And then on top of that, after the Attitude Era, they added Heidenreich with Animal. So they put in, you know, basically just kind of replacements, you know, into that LOD formula to still have Animal work the LOD because they still saw money there. Yeah. So what's interesting about it is what you see now is very reflective of the fact that there's so much going on and so much writing that has to be done and so many storylines. And then whatever Vince wants to do last minute and all these different elements. that in the end, what really just matters is what you remember. And that's how you become a Hall of Famer. Bray Wyatt is on a track to become a Hall of Famer because you still remember his character and what's going on in the story without him being on TV. That's Undertaker-like. That's Austin-like. Mm, yeah. That's Rock-like.
Yeah. So good point.
No, it's a very good point.
Well, cool, guys. I don't know if you have anything else from Raw, but if not, we'll jump over into Impact Wrestling, which was very entertaining this week as well. I won't really go over a whole lot. I'll just say that you know, Moose was being, you know, he kept his word during last week's Hard to Kill. You know, he didn't you know, jump Rich Swann or anything, but this week was a different week, and he did jump Rich Swann. And because of that, he's pretty much calling out Rich for that Impact title. So maybe finally, you know, he can actually walk around with a real title instead of that TNA. But you know one thing that's really weird? There was one segment before he attacked him. They were standing right next to each other. Rich almost looked like that's like he was his son.
So it's like Darby Allin standing next to Sting in the ring.
Yeah, pretty much.
Father and son.
Yeah. I was like, my God. And y'all supposed to have a match? There's no way. I mean, Moose will kill you. You know, I don't know. But yeah, so that's going to be the rival starting with that. So we see where they go with that. And which also is pretty entertaining, Kiera Hogan and Tasha Steelz, which is our new Impact Knockout Champions, they're trying to sell tickets to their in-ring celebration next week. So, you know, if you want the platinum in-ring where you get to hang out with them, you know, it's going to cost you a lot of money. So they've been going around trying to get people to get that platinum in-ring celebration with them. If not, you can get, go ahead.
Who are they pitching this to?
Oh, just different
other wrestlers?
Yeah, two other wrestlers. Because they're trying to get money. You know, they had that big roll of money, which everyone's been stealing from Hernandez. Okay. And now, you know, they had it and now they lost it. And now they are trying to make up some money again. So if you want to celebrate with them. So it's pretty funny.
Impact, that's all you, brother.
Man. You know what? The platinum. Yeah, I don't know how much, but it sounds like it's. You know what? I tell you what, it's not even available anymore because when Havoc and Nevaeh showed up behind them and said, yeah, we'll take that platinum package, they said, you know what? We all sold out. So good stuff. I love it. They already sold out for that. Pretty cool things also for the show. You had Chris Sabin. So the Good Brothers came out. All right. They came out. You know, they are the tag team champions. And then Chris Sabin came out. He still doesn't have Alex with him at the moment. But to join him was James Storm. You know, finally get to see him back out there. And, you know, they had some words that they were going to interchange. And then who pops up on the show? Matt Hardy and Private Party. So they finally make their entrance now into Impact Wrestling. I know I see that head shaking, Matt. So I said, I guess this is pretty much how this is just going to have, you know, kind of go. They're just going to kind of weave in and out different storyline. That's fine. You know, I guess you still get to see different matches and all. Matt Hardy's just funny because he just keeps stiffing these guys. He charged them. Listen to this. He already takes 30% from them because they work at AEW. But if you do anything from a third party, Matt takes 50% off the gate. So they're looking back and forth like, man, 50%, that's a lot. But apparently they want to be winners. So, you know, they go
ahead. As we saw on Dynamite.
Right. So anyway, yeah, they had their match. And when they did have their main event match against Chris Sabin and James Storm, because the whole idea of them now having this match was the winner now gets to, you know, they get to have that title match against the Good Brothers for their titles. So the reality of it is, you know, I'm thinking, you know, Chris Sabin and James Storm was pretty much going to beat these two wimps, right? But who's sitting ringside at Impact Wrestling? Tony Khan and Jerry Lynn. So they're sitting there ringside. And of course, as we about to see who I thought was going to win, Jerry Lynn jumps over the rail and helped out Private Party to win that match. So it's going to end up eventually being a match against Private Party and the Good Brothers, which again, I don't see how they're going to beat the Good Brothers. Good Brothers is just, I mean, Gallo's going to whoop all over him and just himself. He won't even have to tag in the machine gun. But I don't know. We'll see how all that comes out, man.
Not to mention, they actually don't wrestle for the company that they're wrestling for titles.
That's true, too. You know,
I do have to say, though, it was a bit of a stroke of genius, because not only is Matt Hardy acting as the manager now for Private Party,
right,
clearly he is allowing them to use the Hardy teleportation device, as Private Party appeared on both Impact and AEW Dark in the same night.
There you go.
Real quick, I just want to say, because y'all talking about Matt Hardy. Matt Hardy, even, I don't know when that was taped, but he was this week in a car accident, right? And so, of course, I looked it up, and I laughed inside, because the only report I could find was Impact's number one place, SportsKita.com. But I liked what Matt Hardy said in his Twitter. He said, today's free advice, don't rubberneck at Rex, or you'll create another one. So Matt Hardy's had a hell of a fucking week this week. Glad you're okay, by the way. I just want to say that, because I was a little scared when I heard he was in a car wreck. So sorry I interjected there. I just wanted to take the opportunity.
No doubt. The very last thing about the show I'm mentioning is Taya Valkyrie. I've come to really enjoy her wrestling style in the ring. I mean, she is just top notch in the ring, and have been really holding Impact Wrestling down in the women's division. And I didn't know until after, you know, reading up on things, that I knew her contract was up, but I didn't know that she was really departing from Impact Wrestling. But how they did the storyline and write her off, I thought was really cool, and I thought I'd just mention that to you.
How did they kill her?
Did they kill her?
how did they kill her this time?
they didn't do the...
Did she get arrested?
They didn't do the Mortal Kombat thing. But apparently, she is the person who shot Bravo. We've been trying to figure out the whole storyline on how this came about. Now, she didn't technically shoot Bravo. It was Larry D., but she sprayed that cologne that makes him change over into his other person, and he went ahead and did the actions. But she was caught doing that, and she just got tired of Bravo, because Bravo he had this whole love thing with Rosemary and all, and she was just tired of it. And because of what she did, that caused her to have to go to jail. So they went ahead.
So they didn't kill her. They sent her to jail.
They sent
she
her.
She over there singing the Akon song. They got locked up. Won't let me out.
Yeah, the police officers came and took her away. But what was pretty funny is, I'm going to go ahead and read, though, what our boy Tommy Dreamer says, because he's always thinking of something. Ace Romero goes, man, I wonder where they're going to take her. And Tommy goes, well, if she's lucky, she will go to Jacksonville State Prison. But for what she did, she's not that lucky. I think they're going to send her to Stanford Maximum Penitentiary for 2 years, maybe with an option for 3 years. Trust me, that would change a person's soul forever. And then Ace goes, well, I hope they don't send her to Baltimore. So shout out to them for writing that. That was real good. I loved it when I heard all of it. Taya Valkyrie, awesome. We all enjoyed your work, and wherever you go, we're gonna watch you just become a huge star there too. So shout out to her. But that was Impact Wrestling for the week. Let's move over to NXT. What was going on the show this week?
Man, NXT, always a good show. And as much as I'd love to just irritate the shit out of Michaels and go through everything, which gives me pure joy, by the way, I'm only going to touch on two things.
Okay.
One is a tag team that I didn't think, not that I didn't think they have them in them, but it's just because they haven't been presented to us. But boy, did they prove us wrong. And that is the team of Carter and Catanzaro as they face off against Storm and Martinez in the first round of the women's Dusty Tag Team Classic. And I'm saying that. I'm going to be an honest man and tell you, you can say you're going to win the whole damn thing all you want. I ain't never really seen much from y'all that y'all color coordinated and y'all been a team that I really just have not been interested in a while. But I'm taking notice now. They looked good. As far as tag team, women's tag team wrestling that I saw, they look as solid of a team as ever. Don't let the size fool you. That whatever the hell she acquired from learning from Ricochet, Catanzaro, that I don't even know if she completed the whole thing, but the shit looked amazing. I want to see it again. And I played it back twice because I was like, I didn't know you could do that shit. But then I thought of like, okay, you at Ricochet. So I get that. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, so I peaked game. So it was amazing. I'm very happy so far with both perspective, men and women's. But what I really want to talk about, and there's tons of things, y'all can touch on it afterwards, is the fight pit. Reason why I want to talk about the fight pit is because I think that NXT has proven to us is when they have a gem, they know when to reveal it. And it's not going to be all the time. And I believe NXT has something there with the fight pit. And if you attach that to Thatcher and that being his maybe pay-per-view or something, I think that could work. Amazing. Even the way that they had it all set up behind the announce table and everything. And oh, side note, if you ever wonder why they reintroduced Beth Phoenix physically, I meant to say she was physically now there. But if you've heard NXT and you watch TV, she's always kind of been there in voice. So that was interesting. But I liked how they presented it. I like how they even did the old school, you know, when they dropped the cage down for, you know, like the cage, steel cage matches. Mm-hmm. I like how they presented it. They teased it to us. And boy, Tommaso Ciampa and Thatcher did not disappoint. Everything what I thought it was, I thought the perfect one. Even the end when Tommaso Ciampa's leg got caught in the middle part of it. I felt that was a good win. It was hard hitting. It was great. I want more. So that's why I wanted to talk about it. And I wanted to see what y'all thought about it too, because this is something that NXT can pull out of their hat as long as they're not doing it all the time and have it be with Thatcher. He's now 2-0 in the fight pit. I really feel like they did what Raw Underground wished they could have done. Now, no Impact. They don't have strippers, you know, and money flowing around and dice games. I think he called it dice games instead of craps.
Did Raw Underground, so.
They had it the first round. They had it the first round, and it was gone. But I felt like it's something that, for me, I felt like it was something to be expected. Whenever it comes around, I'm going to get excited. So, you know, I'll leave it at that. NXT, once again, great show from start to finish. You know, another quick little side shout-out is Lucha House Party really put in that twerk on freaking Wednesday, because not only did Grand Metalik have you know, was putting in the work, them as a team put in the work on the Dusty Rhodes Tag Team Classic, so they coming up in NXT.
So is Lucha just better in NXT than they were just on the main show?
I don't think it's so much. I think it just has to do with opportunity. I think it just has opportunity. They, you know, they get an opportunity to take the shot, and I think they fit well. And you know,
they had a lot of shots over there at on the main show.
I think that we're seeing what they're actually using the Dusty Classic to do, and that is to build teams and give some shine to some teams that you're probably not going to be thinking would be very successful. Mm-hmm. I know that when I was watching the show and looking over these matches, I literally picked every single match wrong. I picked, like, as I was looking at the lineup, I was like, okay, well, this team's going to win, this team's going to lose. And I literally lost them all as far as my picks.
Sure.
So I think that, you know, I hadn't looked at it like that before. Like, hey, they're going to use this as a platform to, you know, give some love to these teams that might not ordinarily get as much love. And realistically, the Dusty Cup really isn't canon all that much. So it's something that's not really going to be talked about unless they a particular team wins the damn thing. So I think that they actually have played it extremely smart. And hats off to them for, you know, swerving people that might think, oh, well, you know, no chance that this team wins. Oh, well, they just won. That kind of a thing.
Right.
You can say that, you know, it was Leon Ruff and Marty McFly there that, you know, what was interesting about that match, not only are you establishing, you know, something like them as a tag team, you know, and going over on Johnny to further that idea that, you know, here he literally lost, you know.
Yeah.
So it kind of gives that feeling again about, you know, is there a curse, you know, all that good stuff that they've been playing with Johnny with. And eventually, you know, that Austin Johnny relationship will blow up and it will be a fucking amazing match.
Yeah.
But it's also giving a nice little push to those two together and Leon and Marty McFloat. Is it Kushida? Is that who that is?
Yeah.
Kushida.
It's easier for me to just look at him and think Marty McFly because
his official name is Kushida McFly.
Kushida McFly. But you know what was interesting about that? If you put the two in perspective, that's how you started off NXT. And AEW started off with a fucking nightmare train wreck of, you know, so if you're trying to continue to keep your viewership growing, it's really interesting because if you flip over to NXT and you see something like that and you're being given one thing, and this is what we've always, you know, hear about WWE, you know, 3 hours, it's too long and there's stupid shit in there. These things are incoherent. They don't make sense, et cetera, et cetera. It's amazing that there are missteps by AEW to, you know, to be vulnerable in a sense to when you have a good match countering it on NXT. Mm-hmm. And that match that to open up the show was fucking phenomenal, man. You know, it was great to see them. And then the next thing we get to see is MSK doing their little stoner thing. Without going over the top with it, without, you know, the WWE, you know, having to make excuses. But, you know, just the subtle hint of what's going on with that.
Let me ask you, are you pretty shocked that they even kind of allow them to kind of bring that same thing over from Impact to kind of, you know, to this, just with the whole marijuana kind of? Are you surprised they didn't make them just change that? No? Okay.
Nope.
I'm just curious.
Nope. And this is the reason why I'll say that real quick is because I'm telling you, I foresee in the future WWE will officially allow the use of marijuana as not part of their drug protocol. I'm calling it right now. Call me fucking fool. I don't give a shit. Call a beaver where I beaver. It's going to be a beaver in literally a year. And if you smart, you put MSK as the ushers of that new policy. It might be far left. I just had to say it.
Here's the thing. I don't think it even comes down to the drug testing or anything like that, drug policies. I think it's as simple as this. They can't overtly go all the way with it because of the fact that you still have to retain the idea that you have kids watching.
Yep,
right.
So they're not going to go that far. The other thing is that NXT has a little more freedom. If you bring them up to the main roster, then you're going to be... especially if you go to SmackDown, Fox has a lot of hands in the pie there. USA really doesn't have as much. And I think in some sense, USA has an easier time because of the content they show that they would actually probably not be as stingy about it as Fox would be, because Fox is a brand, they're under the Disney belt, etc., etc. So but in the end, it also helps at least to keep them comfortable in establishing what they're doing, because the best part about that was the fact that they highlighted them as innovators. So you had stoners who were innovators. That's brilliant because it plays to both audiences. Mm-hmm. And that's great. I think what I got out of this week from the whole tournament idea is I'm thinking MSK and Grizzled Young Veterans. Grizzled Young Veterans, I think, ends up going over. I think that's your Dusty Cup winner right there.
I think that they definitely have something to gain, and I'm glad that you said that, Michaels, because that was my sentiment too. They are utilizing this Dusty Cup well to do two things. Number one, get us to see the showcase of teams in general, right? That we normally don't see. But also, too, I saw a really true resurgence in representation of tag team wrestling, which you don't see in AEW yet. I'm going to be honest with you. Yeah, you have some good teams, but you don't see it. And you haven't seen it definitely in main product, SmackDown, and in Raw on a consistent basis. And I think that, for me, I think it's good to start here. And we hope that when some of these teams go to the next level, if and when that happens, we know the politics. I hope that they stay together because they seem solid. And as far as the Grizzled Young Vets, at some point they will go back to NXT UK, and them winning the Dusty Cup would be kind of good. Cause I think the way it works with the maybe not now, but they can still go. They still go there and compete at some point, even though they came over to NXT. I could be wrong with that.
Well, you know, one of the interesting factors is something we'll be talking about on Three Count, and that is...
That's why I said that. Travel.
With those guys, yeah. We'll be seeing what the travel log gets to say, so...
Yeah.
But, you know, for now, for what they're doing... and can we just say it was nice to finally see another Imperium member get a chance to show up now?
Yeah. I don't know. He shocked the shit out of them. It was like... Like, you know, it's interesting. I'm going to say this real quick and I'll stop. It's interesting when you haven't seen a member of your team for a long, long, long time. And you just don't know when that person's going to show up. And then one day that member just shows up out of nowhere. And all of us are looking at each other like, you showed up. I feel like that's going to be our life one day. I just want to point that out there one day.
Okay. We appreciate those great analysis you just dropped there.
Thatcher and Ciampa win the Dusty Cup, by the way.
Ah.
Oh, that's your shot?
That's my pick.
Mine's Thatcher MSK. And mine's MSK.
And one final note. Zoe Stark, baby.
Yeah.
Zoe awesome. Stark right into the mix along with Elena Black and Priscilla, you know, having Lacey there. Smart move signing those women. And I can't wait to see how much more talent they gobble up within the next few weeks going into, you know, that I think after WrestleMania weekend, you know, there'll be a lot of contracts locked in with women. I haven't heard anything to the extent of, but I wouldn't be surprised at some point if they do try to do a Superstars-esque style show with just the women.
You know what? I like that and almost utilize it how AEW does AEW Dark and utilize that for women, the one that you normally wouldn't see a TV slot time. I think that I would buy into that. I would clear my time on Saturday to see that, to be honest with you.
All right. Well, let's jump over into our next favorite show, AEW. Tell me about it, man. How was it this past week?
It was all right, bro. To piggyback off of something that Michaels threw out there, the opening segment of the show was very, very, very polarizing, to say the very least. I saw people that thought that it was great. I saw people thought that it was the absolute dirt worst, and people are all over the map on it. Personally, I think that this is it. This needs to be the send off for Negative One. I understand what we want to do, and we want to be sensitive to things and celebrate certain things. But yeah, I could do without having young Brody Lee Jr. on TV.
Right.
And that's about the nicest way that I can put that. Only because, you know, if you've got a casual fan that's just flipping through the channels, or maybe someone that was watching the lead-in programming, and they're like, okay, well, I'm going to check out what this AEW stuff is. Okay. And they go and they have a kid's birthday party, and they have cartoon character-esque villains saying that they're going to ruin his birthday and that they hate kids and all this other stuff. And then Dr. Luther,
but my
God bless him, Dr. Luther, he put in the work for a while, but again, he's someone else I could do without seeing on my TV in a wrestling mode.
But when do you see him? That was my problem. You took people that you don't even really see and had them come out and cut this ridiculous promo about how his face was perfectly asymmetrical, that he hates children, and he couldn't even take a cake bump.
He couldn't take the damn cake bump.
Dude.
That's like the easiest bump to take.
Seriously. Yeah.
That's a lot of cushion.
Hey, I do have to say this, though. The post-match stuff was fucking hilarious. You got John Silver on his knee proposing to Hangman Page, asking him to join the Dark Order. And then, obviously, Hangman Page says no, but then they get all of the hoopla and the pageantry, yeah, and the he said yes shit on the AEW Tron behind him, all this other kind of stuff. It was awesome. And I laughed, audibly laughed. But yeah, I mean, that was the only good part about the entire opening segment. It just went on for far too long. And I mean, there were other things in this show that were just giant missteps. Like, I absolutely fucking hated the finish to the Cody and Peter Avalon match. Absolutely fucking hated it. Mm-hmm. Those two guys, they had a great TV match, quite honestly. Both guys busted their ass. And you know, Peter Avalon locks him up, and Cody is threatening to slap him in the face, and so Peter Avalon taps out. Are you fucking kidding me? Are you fucking kidding me? I don't know, man.
There was a lot of elements of dark in this episode, because you had a lot of, like, why are they wrestling? It was like watching a Raw from 1994, where you had, you know, just unexplained wrestlers, you know, losing because it was obviously jobbers.
Yeah.
I don't know, man.
I do have to say, though, and I said this as soon as everything got started. John Moxley versus Nick Comoroto. Nick Comoroto's got a hell of a look. Quite frankly, put him with Jurassic Express. He is a fucking caveman.
Mm-hmm.
Put him in there with a fucking dinosaur, a boy, a freaking Tarzan, and now you got a caveman. Like, it makes sense. Just do it. Push this guy as being, you know, having unbelievable brute strength. He's got an amazing look, and quite frankly, I mean, he can fine tune some things. Yes, it was a squash match in there against Moxley, but the little glimmer of offense that Comoroto had in that match, I think he really impressed a lot of people. I saw quite a few things online talking about how this guy made an amazing impression on him in a fucking job role. Mm-hmm. So, finally, the thing that I'll say it, this stole the show, was the finally Private Party actually turned full on fucking heel. They turned full on heel. They ended up defeating Top Flight and Matt Dow. And you know, they've been flirting with the whole, oh yeah, well, you know, Matt Hardy is obviously blatantly heel. These guys are, you know, just going with it for whatever reason. And they weren't happy about it, but then you see the finish come when, you know, they use a steel chair and they cheat to get the win. And, then they get the heelish smiles on their faces. And quite frankly, that was something that needed to happen, and let these guys be heels. It just makes sense, with what they're trying to do. So
I like Private Party. Yeah. They've come a long ways. I mean, I remember when I first saw them last year, as the company was going, I'm like, oh, okay, this is interesting. You know, duo of guys here that are, I wasn't familiar with them. And they were, I saw the potential then, I guess is what I'm saying. And from watching them now, and even what they were doing over on Impact, they're going to be a team to definitely, you know, be great to watch in the future.
Yeah. They're still better on Friday nights.
Oh, Jesus.
Anyway,
please keep going.
I was going to say, ask you, Sin City Seed,
yeah,
with regards to Private Party. Do you feel that they are way better as heel versus them as face? Because, you know, I feel like I wasn't really feeling them as much. I thought they were very flashy, but them and what they first started off, I felt like it was a little bland. It's a little bland. Now, it could have been what I was watching, but what I'm seeing now is like, wow, I'm actually pretty excited. Do you feel like heel is a better fit for them?
I think that definitely remains to be seen, but if this was any indication, yeah, definitely. But yeah, I agree with you. They were pretty bland, and as far as character development, working as baby faces, they just didn't latch on. But I think that as heels, yeah, they're definitely going to do a lot more, and they're going to go a lot farther than if they were to stay as baby faces. So this is huge for these guys, and I can't wait to see what happens as a result.
Can we just address though the asininery of the whole fucking Young Bucks going to Omega's house and Callis and fucking Marvez? Oh my God. If the fucking WWE does that, the fans would just be fucking shitting all over this. It was just like, and then, you know, Callis has got the fucking makeup on his face in the fucking locker room. Marvez is like following with the, it's just like, shit, man.
Michaels, what did you think of the painting?
I thought that out of everything I saw this week, that was probably the best part of it. Because it was, you know, the funniest thing about it is all the whispers over the years about Kenny being gay. And then you come out with that picture. And it was like, I hope he is gay, so it doesn't look like a gay, like, slur, yeah, you know, or an like anti-gay thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, I mean, I don't ever think I was, in my mind, that I would ever seen a picture of Don Callis's face on that type of body with a clear fucking V-line down to his dick.
It's that V-line, is that arrow.
Oh my God. It was just like there were elements. See, that's the whole thing. That's what's so frustrating. There are elements they have that are so fucking smart. And then they put in certain elements. They're just like, take Marvez down to the dungeon with the camera guy so the camera could just be left on the floor so that it would still be recording. Like,
right.
Wouldn't Callis, who has been around the business for fucking 40 years, be able to see a camera on the floor and go, well, that's fucking still record, you know?
Right.
Ugh.
Yep.
Part of me wants to love it, and part of me just goes, no fucking way am I gonna go, that was good.
Yeah.
And yeah, then sorry, Steve, but really quick, just to top it off, then I had to sit through fucking Miro and the Butler and Orange Cassidy And it just was like, oh, they're for the good they do on the show, then mm-hmm. they do shit like that, where it's just like,
yeah.
Comparison. Sasha Banks faces the fucking Butler, and that was unbelievable.
Right.
Here you have, you know, the asinine use of being the manservant, and just like, oh my god, come on, get to this wedding, please. And
just like, no shit,
scrap it. And Jesus, it makes my head hurt sometimes to think, how can you do five great things and then five just horrific things and just find no middle ground?
Yeah.
It's a whip, man. It's a whip. Same and simple. Whip. Work in progress. Thus is AEW definitely for the past year.
Definitely. And obviously, as everyone who watched the show knows, the wrong team won in the main event. So you had the Inner Circle Tag Team Classic, if you will, as MJF and Chris Jericho teamed against Santana and Ortiz against Sammy Hager. And I did like the little video spot that they got Sammy Hagar to do. Mm-hmm. Clearly he's never watched professional wrestling in his life. So that made me laugh outwardly again. And that was just hilarious.
Yeah.
Thank God they didn't bring him in to do a fucking splash off the top rope.
Oh my God.
Right.
No shit. Anyway. Yeah, obviously the, MJF and Jericho got the win as MJF rolled up Sammy Guevara with a handful of trunks. And the stipulation of this match was that the winners of this match would be the tag team in the Inner Circle going forward. Mm-hmm. So we'll see what kind of fallout happens from that. But honestly, this episode of Dynamite largely felt like as if it was just spinning wheels, man. I don't know. I don't know what they were doing. Who wrote this episode? But there were definitely some creative missteps, in my opinion.
Do we know who any of their writers are? Is there any names that we're familiar with that we could say, oh, they are part of the writer? Okay,
no.
I'm just kind of
curious. I don't know. I don't know who's on the writing team.
Got you.
Okay. I was just thinking that. I said the best thing they could have done. The best thing they could have done for this episode is toward the end, have somebody be like, who the hell is writing this shit? Go into a door that's like a broom closet and then have somebody open it in there, right? And like, you didn't like this shit? That would have been cool. I felt like, you know, like Impact does it all the time. They don't take themselves seriously and it works for them. So if you fuck up, it's just like, hey, you're not really taking yourself seriously anyways.
Yeah, but the problem is that unfortunately, see, Impact can do it.
Yeah, because they have their own network, technically, yeah.
Well, and they don't have any stake in it, right? Yeah. You already have a show that isn't, a major force. They're not putting all the money that AEW is putting into the wrestlers, and the money that TNT is putting into the actual production of the show. Yeah. So that's the head scratcher. If you've seen DJ, did you watch AEW?
I watched some of it.
Okay. You're the one who watched Impact and you're the one who watched AEW.
Mm-hmm.
Did you feel that what you saw on Impact was more entertaining than what you saw, the little bit that you saw mm-hmm. on AEW?
Absolutely. But I actually feel like that on a, even if I didn't watch this week, I would say the same thing the following week because I guess with Impact, they have a, even if you don't care for the storyline or how corny or stupid or whatever you think it is, there is a storyline which goes to everything and they follow up with it and they go along with it. So as long as the performers are in the ring doing what they need to do, going along with this storyline, it makes it a lot more entertaining than with AEW. Sometimes I just get lost. Like I'm just confused as to like, you know, who, why, okay. You know,
and that's a very good analysis. And my feeling again is that goes to show that the Impact mind, the people who do the creative on Impact, are very good at doing that. So that makes me wonder, AEW's got a lot of good minds around there. I don't think it's necessarily who's writing it as compared to, is Tony Khan affecting any of this? You know, where is the brain trust coming from? Because in Impact, they don't have to answer to anyone, right? Mm-hmm. They know each other, the team is together, and they just do that.
Right.
With AEW, you know, we can always say that you're writing for one for Vince in WWE, but how much of this is being influenced to what Tony Khan wants to see? You know?
Right.
So, and maybe there's just that, they haven't landed on a decent compromise of how you do certain things. Like, how can you show up at Impact and do fucking very smart commercials on their show for your product?
Mm-hmm.
But then when you tune into AEW, it makes you question, how come that thing is so good over there, but you don't have something that's equivalent on your own show, and right, in terms of the entertainment value of that.
Yeah.
So I hope Don Callis, just please let the guy fucking start just getting nice and creative and massaging. And ooh, yeah, you're gonna get stupid massaging things. Well, you saw the painting.
Apparently you took that to a times two level. You know, I will say one thing to AEW's defense, and this is something that we used to talk about when AEW first started. I think that we used to complain a lot about AEW not, you know, being opposite of what WWE did, not showcasing enough people. And I see it like they're trying to showcase enough people, and I feel like that could be a challenge of, you know, trying to let everybody get on the merry-go-round per se. Do you see what I'm saying? And I feel like that could be a challenge as well. Because I do feel like sometimes if I don't watch AEW for a week and then come back to it, I do kind of feel a little discombobulated a little bit. Like I'm trying to like almost catch up. Like, man, I know I missed a week, but shit, I'm trying to catch up. So I wonder, could that be a challenge? Because should they just say we're only going to let these people shine and then we stick with that story beat and be consistent?
You know, but the problem with that theory is this. A, what they need to do, and this is why I keep, you know, for a year I've been harping on getting the million, you know, plus and keeping it there, is that fact that you just said, if I miss it for a week, the goal is to have no one missing it.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have a product that is tight enough, you won't even question that, right? And then I think the other thing too is just simply stated that when we talk about using, you know, more people, etc., what we're seeing from them is a very odd thing, and that is, 1 week you can have fucking four solid matches, then on the next week you have now, you know, them going against people that are not established, and they're essentially working in a jobber role. So then what you're doing is you're just basically putting people over to establish them as dominant characters. But at the same time, you do things like have Taz come on the video and supposed to have this menacing, kick-ass faction, and Taz's kid looks so out of place, where you have to have him on the end,
mm-hmm,
next to Ricky, because if you put him over by the animals.
I'm glad you said that, because he looked like the water boy. Get that boy a bucket of Gatorade and some cups.
You know, I listen, I don't know his talent level. I don't know much about
him. He's good. I've seen some videos. Like, he could come up, but he's small.
But as of right now, it's just so weird, especially because you're trying to put the emphasis here on Darby being, you're trying to elevate him to that next level to make him a superstar, right? So you already have him in the ring with Sting, and looking like Sting looks like a grown fucking man who's a wrestler. And Darby looks like a skateboard punk kid.
He looked like Teen Titans. That's when I see Darby Allin. I know you're going to be great, bro. You Robin, one day you'll get up there. But you Teen Titans, my bro.
So you want it. So you want to get then you want to get that illusion that Darby could competitively fight with a Brian Cage, right? Well, you got then the fact that Ricky has been in a feud with Darby, and Ricky is, you know, talented, but he's not a Brian Cage type. So it's such a weird mix when you're trying to take some of these guys and make them your legitimate stars when you're battling yourself by just putting weird situations out there. Like, who the fuck really cares right now that you're going to see, you know, Steve, like you said, most likely you're going to see Sting do three things, right? Lay him out and then have Darby get his ass kicked for fucking 15 minutes.
Basically,
you know, so is this really enhancing Darby when we're going to see then Sting be the savior of them? And every time now, you know, things have gone down, Sting has been the savior. Unless you're building up for Sting versus Darby, which I
don't, please don't. Please don't. God. I'm saying it right now. Please, AEW, don't shoot yourself in the foot with that idea.
And on top of this all, you got a guy like Moxley who constantly comes out and is fucking great and is one of your best investments that you made. So it's weird, man. It's weird because you just want to see guys elevate it, but then a guy like Moxley shows you exactly why that experience in the WWE fucking translates. And we also know as of this week that Moxley has never closed the door in his mind to a WWE return. So AEW,
of course,
better.
Of course not. He played better this fucking payoffs. But you know, real quick, I want to just really quick double back to Darby Allin and Darby Allin. Darby Allin. That's the female version of Darby Allin. But anyways, and Sting. The one thing you have it pinned white. Sting is the savior. And I mentioned him early as a Teen Titan. And if you keep up with comics, there was a point where Robin really honestly saved Batman in a pinch situation. I would like to see that storyline play out at AEW. I think that would be elevating or a better way to elevate Darby Allin because he has the talent. We know he's going to be great. I think anybody that sees him sees something there. But have it to where something happens to Sting and it's up to Darby Allin and nobody wants to help him. He gets it done. In the innovative way that only he can do it, that identifies with him. I would love to see it. I don't know how y'all feel.
Well, I think that we're gonna see that probably as soon as this street fight tag match. I think that one thing that I had, you know, kind of thought about was that Sting could possibly get jumped before the match so that he doesn't even come out, you know, for the start of the match. Mm-hmm. And then have him hobble out there toward the end of it. And obviously it's a street fight. So he comes out with a bat and all that he'll have to do is just hit those motherfuckers with bats a couple of times. And then you get Darby up there and, you know, maybe have him hit a coffin drop, Sting do a scorpion death drop. That's it. And then obviously Darby is the one that should get the pin on this so that he, you know, gets the shine.
Better.
He needs to. Right, he absolutely needs to.
Yeah.
So if the match ending is anything other than Darby getting the pin, then it's a huge misstep, and I have no problems calling him out on it, as evidenced by what I've said tonight.
Yeah. All right.
I think we all know that we want AEW to do great things. I think even for a whole year, as much as Michaels goes on about them, it's more constructive criticism because we want the product to be great, and I think everybody, for all intents and purposes, does.
Yep.
But you got to get through these challenges, man. And I think for all of us are what we're saying, this is consistently going on, 3 months? Same shit.
Yep.
Over to SmackDown. I got to tell you, Matt Michaels, let me just name Sami Zayn.
Yes.
First off, the whole show was just great. But yeah. Sami just elevated to a point where I was just... Wait, what is the... Hold on. Stand against moral injustice.
Oh, man.
Oh, Matt, tell me. Yeah. Tell me about the show, man.
Matt, you know, when you're allowed that bit of creativity, you know, listen, if you're going out there and you're going to be handcuffed out there, a lot of what you're doing is going to be reactionary and improv. And thank God Sammy has been given the torch to do this, because the brilliance of it was, I scratched my head at what the fuck they're doing with Apollo Crews, because you had him
right
in that really cool talk with Roman, and right. It's like, okay, maybe we're going to see a little badassery out of him. And then him and Eve, they wrestle as basically like two faces would wrestle, essentially.
Yeah.
And then you have Sammy lay them both out, which I thought was brilliant. But at the same time, you just took the shine off of Apollo, which says a lot about, you know, what they're thinking about Apollo. It was great. I mean, that whole thing, to see the wrestlers coming down and to have them there with a sign.
Yeah.
You know, that's the really cool shit that you can do.
Yeah.
You know, and then on top of that, you start off the show with, again, Roman Reigns delivering on such a level. And then handing that mic over to Paul. Oh, my God. Oh my God! It was.
I'm
like,
from New York City, and I will kick your ass.
No, that's not what he said. I thought he said the West, and he had a little New York.
He put some flavor behind it, man.
I was like, all right, Paul Heyman, ECW, motherfucker, get that in the ponytail.
So right there, we're already eating out of the palm of their hand.
Right. Yeah. Yep.
Adam Pearce, by the way, who is one of those guys that if you're a SoCal guy, you've known and seen Adam for years and years. And by God, the one thing I give him is that he actively listens and tries to give reactions. So when all this is going on, you can see that he's, you know, processing things. And yeah, I'm going to fight you. That's fine. Then we get that backstage brilliance of Paul. I never asked you to do that. So now you got to prove yourself.
Right.
Now we're really eating out of their hands, because now we're buying into, wait, Paul Heyman's going to go against fucking Adam Pearce. He's going to get his ass kicked.
Right.
Oh. You know, as wrestling fans, that we're about to get swerved.
Yeah.
But yet it was done so brilliantly, because Paul sells so well, and Roman is just naturally just delivering this shit. To that moment where Paul goes down on that step.
Twice.
Yeah.
He couldn't even make it. He said, hold on.
And then unraveling the tape, hard subject to change.
It was like, I got you, motherfuckers.
Oh, you know, and the music hits, and you see Roman come down, and you see Pierce realizing, oh, fuck. And then out of nowhere, because they kept Kevin away. One of the biggest pet peeves of fucking wrestling is when you're going to have a surprise attack, never do show the guy like they did. Like he's doing a video from his car. That was great.
Right.
It was a nice setup. Not even thinking he's in the building anywhere.
Right. Yep.
Out of nowhere. And it's a fucking brutal fucking attack beatdown. Good Christ, are they fucking firing on all cylinders?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Fuck, yeah,
it's remarkable. And then something that I thought I was just gonna absolutely fucking hate was the obstacle course.
I said it was cool,
it was amazing.
Yeah,
it was. Bailey fucking, you know, just taking over. It's her obstacle course going around the walls.
Yeah. Like, she thought about it.
just all the heel shit you would do. And then Bianca just busting her ass and looking like a fucking star.
Right.
I can't wait. I got a feeling that those two are going to end up teaming up at some point, because it just feels like you got fire and ice right there, man. It would just be beautiful to see them as a fucking tag team.
You know what they remind me of? Real quick. They remind me. Remember when Matt Hardy, was it V?
Version one.
In MVP. Remember how they started off the same exact way, and then they became like a duo. And I was just like, man, this is perfect. They worked off of one another, and I feel the same way about Bianca Belair and Bayley.
And Bianca will hopefully, as you know, as the way this is going story-wise, I would love to see Bianca and Bayley in the Rumble eliminate as a team together, eliminate one or two people, and then Bianca eliminates Bayley. You know, and to show that she has the superior, or vice versa, you go the traditional heel, you know, switch on Bianca. Mm-hmm. But I think if you go the face eliminating Bayley, because Bayley thinks that's the brilliance of it. It's so easy when you think of characters in the sense that bad guys think they're always smarter than you, and they always fail in showing that they're smarter than you. That works time and time again. We've seen it since the early days of wrestling on television. It's such a, you know, the egotist is the most hated person, but is always the one who seems like they're fucking right until they show that they have these faults and they're wrong. Mm-hmm. And the obstacle course was brilliant because you saw that. And then what, of course, does Bayley do? Beat the fuck out of her.
Yeah.
You know, just fuck this. Boom.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
That is where you get excited. And this is where good writing comes in. And I don't know what is motivated. Maybe it's Fox's pressure. Maybe it's, maybe it's Uncle Brucey just being forced to focus on that show. But damn, man, I'll tell you.
And you know what's interesting? I just say this right quick because I see you want to say something on Simon Street. Also, if you guys watch, because of course there's a little delay between the fan screen and what you're actually watching. But when you watch, when the fans finally catch up what's happening, there's just a lot of excitement that comes. I watch those screens, like, these people be losing their minds, like, yes. I mean, like, a lot of camera motion that you wouldn't necessarily get, you know, from, especially if you watch certain things on Raw. You may get a, you know, but I mean, the excitement level from the fans is just on point. I got to give it to you as well. So, yes, good stuff. I told you last week, Billie Kay, I see her now. I see her now, okay? She is just entertaining. I'm loving everything she do right now. I'm waiting to see what's going to happen next with her, because she's showing that she wants to stand out. And she's doing just that. I mean,
she's leaning to her strength.
Really cool. At the same time, not only is she doing that, but when you have someone like that, you also then elevate Ruby and Liv.
Right. That's true.
Because, you know, you can have them. That's the coolest thing right now. You can have them lose a match to the tag champions, and they don't look any weaker because Billy fucked it up.
Right.
And now you have a little turmoil, you know, and where is Billy? I love that. Where is Billy going to go with this?
Yeah.
And now that we have the Rumble coming up, it's going to be really interesting to see.
Yeah.
Do you go with her in the traditional sense of wrestling? You'll have a character like that go in and get dumped out within 30 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's just, we've seen that time and time again with the Rumble.
Right.
I wouldn't mind seeing that maybe Billy works together with the Riot Squad. Maybe all of a sudden the Riot Squad during the Rumble feel like, hey, another ally is a good thing. And then Billy goes and screws them over, or they catch her trying to screw him over, you know, and now you have logic. There's, when you go simple again, there's so much you can do with it.
Right.
And that is one of the, dude, what, one of the best memes out there with Bernie this week was Bernie sitting there in the picture and having Billy Kay next to him with the resume. Yes. That was fucking awesome. Yeah.
I tell you right now, I'm surprised that WWE didn't do, like, you know how they say what's trending and shit? Bernie was trending from Monday to fucking today. I swear. I've seen Bernie Sanders memes more than I've seen any meme in a long time, and I wasn't looking for it like that.
But. And the funny thing about that, according to what was just jumping off into, now that you mentioned Bernie, the photographer said that he was just interested in his mittens. That's why he took that picture. It was just that the mittens he had on was like, what are those? And he just,
they look crocheted. They look crocheted, like somebody made them for him.
Yeah, and they did. They did.
Okay, that's what I was wondering. I said they look crocheted. Yeah,
there was someone from New Hampshire who I think it was New Hampshire who made those for him, or Maine or whatever. Mm-hmm. What is interesting is from all the different memes around regarding wrestling putting Bernie into those situations, he actually looked better this week than Carmella.
Well, maybe not in what Carmella was wearing, because let me tell you, she was looking.
If those lips
could fabulous, talk, like she used to spell those it out lips for could us.
Talk, we knew everything she was saying this week, definitely.
Hold on. Now, can I add this real quick? Did y'all see when she came around with her boy, right? And she had the champagne and she was sitting down. They said something to Corey, and Corey's, look, man, you can't be saying, I forgot what it was. And every time I played it back, I couldn't hear it muffled. But those are the things that I look for. Because it's no secret that they are together. And anytime she's ever had to sit down in commentary as a guest, I'm always looking for that small little Easter egg. And even though I didn't hear it this week, I want to see more of that because that's interesting. And that can only help Carmella. Let's just be honest.
Well, I would also say they showcased, I guess his name was Reginald. I remember that. They showcased him well. I mean, he did a good job himself. Those moves that he was doing, I was like,
Cirque du Soleil.
I mean,
let's face it though. The honest thing is, if you put a guy that talented against Sasha Banks, who is that talented, why the fuck are we now interested in watching Carmella wrestle Sasha at the fucking pay-per-view?
Right.
Really, man? He was so fucking fluid with her,
right?
That it's like,
I was jealous. I was jealous. I wish I was that fluid with Sasha Banks in the ring. If I ever had a chance to be in the ring, I'm like,
I know what part
you're trying to be nasty. I'm just being honest because they look.
I know what part he lost his. I know what part he lost his mind when Reginald had his own. He was holding her and you were seeing where his hands were. I know you lost your mind, Simon Street.
I was like, hold on now.
Right.
I know. You don't need to thrust again. I need to throw her.
I'll tell you, Simon Street would definitely be the wrong kind of Sasha Banks, okay?
Wait, say that one more time. You cut out?
I said Simon Street would definitely be the wrong kind of fluid in that match.
You know me. I never, ever disrespect my beautiful bae is what I call her. But I'm saying at the end of the day, they had so much chemistry in that ring. It looked amazing. Like it was like watching Dirty Dancing, the movie, the chemistry. It was great. And you
since you just said that, here's the perfect comparison. So if him and Sasha were Dirty Dancing the film, Sasha and Carmella is Dirty Dancing, the fucking TV musical fucking abortion of a show that shit thing was they did last year in 2019. It was so fucking bad.
Yeah, it was horrible. It was forgettable.
It was awful. So, you know, that's the thing that floors me. It's like, I can't believe they allowed him to shine like that, knowing that, I mean, Carmella better fucking get her shit together for this match, or I don't know what you do with her from that point on, other than make her a fucking commentator.
But the question is, here's the question: does WWE, you know, the writers, Vince or whoever, do they see her at this point as are they seeing her the way we seeing her come off? Because they may see her really coming off as doing what she needs to do and like it, although we see what's coming off and it's nothing that way at all.
Well, so go ahead, Simon.
Oh,
go ahead.
I was just gonna say I'm gonna do WWE a favor if y'all care. I'm gonna throw y'all a bone. When y'all first had her do her promos for this new persona of Carmella, I imagined that she would be presented of having a skill set of that of Lex Luthor. And the reason why I use the character of Lex Luthor, if you look at Lex Luthor, it's not about who he was in being Superman's rival. It was that he had facilitated assets that he could call upon anytime. I felt like WWE looked like they were going to go that way with her character and then fell back. Carmella was like, I can do what I want to do when I want to. Well, goddamn woman, show me what you want to do. You got all this power, all this money. Why don't you relaunch her or have it to where she is doing tons of shit? She has it to where Sasha can't find the outfit she was going to wear for the day. And this throws her off. So this throws it's just so many different directions to go with it.
Listen, you could even go simpler and just simply do Carmella is the money person. She's not the greatest fighter, so therefore, you know, she brings in a beast like, you know, one of the NXT girls, you know, because you've got a lot of, you know, muscle there.
Mm-hmm.
The problem with it is this: they built her up, but the return is at this point simply she was a former champ. So it lends a little credibility of an opponent that Sasha can go against for a few months to, you know, not just put Sasha in a feud that you would blow off. You know, don't blow your load now. Let it grow to the point when you can actually use some of the other wrestlers to pay off. For instance, if they would have brought up Rhea Ripley right now and put her on SmackDown,
just gonna say that
it would have just fucking it would have killed, you know, the fact. But if Carmella goes, loses this match, and maybe you see a Rhea Ripley show up to, you know, declare her, you know, something, you know, we're moving towards WrestleMania, so now you have to find that WrestleMania opponent. This is a holdover, and you're going to see Carmella probably do these types of things. The danger is going to be what's going to happen when Eva Marie shows up, if she ever shows up. Because you're going to literally have two women who are pretty much the same fucking person.
Yep.
So
maybe just keep them on separate shows.
I would assume, but you could also kind of
put them together
and use them as a tag team. And this way they could kind of cover each other's weaknesses.
And I got to be honest with you, the ring attire that they would wear, woo, that'll make up for a lot of the problems we do have with those characters. I'm just being real with you. I'm not trying to be mean. I'm just saying, I mean, Fox know what they doing. You mean to tell me you had Carmella on guest commentary with some champagne for the second time that I seen with that dress she had, or whatever the hell she had on? I'm like, goddamn, woman. I didn't know you had all that. Corey knew you got all that, because Corey was like, I'm going to snatch you up like a hot plate.
Yeah. Well, look, we're gonna continue, because the producers are telling me, come on, wrap it up. So let me move over right quick to ROH. They're back. You know, they took some time off. A pure wrestling match took place with Josh Woods and versus Dalton Castle. That was a really good match. You know, pure rules is only 15 minutes, and it came down of a few seconds, and Josh Woods made Dalton Castle tap. Great match. I didn't know how that was going to come out, but Josh Woods, man, he is he's got skills. Let's just put it that way. Very great match. There. And then their main event was the Foundation. And of course, if you don't know who the Foundation, Jay Lethal, Jonathan Grisham, Rhett Titus, and Tracy Williams. It wasn't all of them, but the Foundation versus Shane Taylor Promotions, which is pretty much Shane Taylor and SOS. in the foundation, Rhett Titus, he didn't fight in that particular match. But it was just funny because as Shane Taylor promotions come down, they're like, with a total weight of 891 pounds, you know, and it's like, okay. Then it comes the foundation with the total weight of 523 pounds. You're like, oh my God. And you already can tell just from the way that those guys looked that it was, you know, big guys. But yeah, Shane Taylor promotions, they whooped on these guys. They had the weight on them. They had the skills. Shane Taylor's just a straight gangster. He just wants to just beat them up. You know, I like Shane, man. He's just straight street, if you want to say that, Simon Street. He is street, okay? And he let it be known, and he took him out. It was a great match, though, to see. All of them did good work, and it's just wonderful. I can't say enough good words about ROH, and it was great to see that they are back. So they won that. If you haven't got a chance to check them out, check it out. It's only 1 hour, so it's not bad. Nothing too much was going on New Japan right now unless you – had any information since. See, I just want to bring up, there was one article that was mentioned about asking was Kenny Omega was considering coming back. I guess since they saw him in a Bullet Club shirt, I guess the marks go, oh my God, yep. Here we go, he's about to come back.
That's exactly what it was.
Yeah, mm-hmm. But Dave Meltzer said it, that Kenny Omega is not going to New Japan in the foreseeable future. Let me ask you though, Steve, should Kenny Omega pretty much stay away from New Japan and just continue to work on AEW, or do you see maybe there's an opportunity that he should jump into New Japan at the moment?
The New Japan thing's not going to happen, at mm-hmm. least not right now. Yeah. It's the focus right now for AEW is Impact and vice versa.
Right.
So, if they choose to branch out more and pursue a working relationship with New Japan, then great. I'm all for it. But if they don't, I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah. Also, I guess Tama Tonga is interested in doing New Japan, doing business with WWE. And, you know, we reported that Triple H said he's open for business. That was this quote for last month. So
No.
Okay.
Impact, you got to read the whole quote.
With Triple H?
No, for Toma? Tama Tonga.
Yeah, I'll read that. Yeah.
All right.
So Toma says this. Come on, man. Why you got to say this? He yeah, says, I mean, he says, ain't no, he says, ain't nobody give a fuck about Impact. I got no problem with WWE. No problems. Hunter, Vince McMahon, anybody, we're open for business. You come take care of me and my people. I'm talking about BC and New Japan. Let's do business. I have no beef with y'all like these other cats building a company just to rival you. No, we're New Japan. We've been here. We have no problems. Our gates are wide open. Let's do business. WWE, what's good? Man.
What was that first sentence?
I don't want to read that.
Fuck Impact. Ain't nobody think about Impact.
Oh, man. Why they shit on it? It's such, you know, everyone's always shitting on Impact. It just bothers
me. Nah, but
I didn't know you were on his radar.
No.
Man, I tried to tell you, stop flapping off with them gums, bro.
Yeah, I know, right?
That's a warning shot, bro.
But, just a question. Do you think there's a chance we may see Triple H take that offer? We're doing something with New Japan. You think there's a chance?
I mean, I would be completely fine with it. I know that there was rumblings about WWE actually purchasing Pro Wrestling Noah in Japan and launching that as an NXT Japan brand before the pandemic last year. So, I mean, they are looking at working with other promotions. It's just a matter of time and a matter of money. So if it makes sense for WWE, then they'll do it. They're not going to make concessions for anybody else.
Yeah.
And quite frankly, they are the industry leader. They have been for years. So they don't have to acquiesce to anybody. They don't have to cater to anybody. It's all about these other companies wanting to cater to WWE.
Right. Yeah. And it's amazing. I mean, New Japan, it's I think I was reading somewhere where, you know, they just kind of, they just do their own thing. And everybody really wants to do things with them, which we understand. But it's not like it's New Japan going around going, man, we want to do business with this corporate, you know, this promotion or this promotion. Everybody wants to do promotions with them, you know, which says a lot, you know. And it's great because they don't need to do any promotion. But, you know, people really enjoy New Japan when you get a chance to experience.
Well, the one thing you got to remember too, there's a reason that companies want to do business with them. Mm-hmm. And that is, that's the predominant wrestling company in Japan. Japan is such a fucking huge market that the more you can get in with the Japanese audience, and something like an NXT Japan lends itself perfectly to working with them. You know, Three Count, if you listen to it tomorrow on the podcast, or if you tune in a little bit later here and a little bit here, we'll talk a little bit about the travel ban. And that is probably one of the most complicating things to any relationships with anyone in Japan right now will be the, you know, the idea of travel and quarantines and all that stuff. So,
well, good stuff, fellas. Everyone, thank you for listening. That's our wrestling talk. If you were watching us live, thanks for commenting. There was a lot of comments and a lot of people just coming through just to check out the show. Storm and Mormon, shout out to you. I see Randy. I see Liam, Diane, Lori. Just quite a few people showed up. Just thanks for popping in. And if you're listening to us on our on your podcast, thank you for downloading and listening and continue to tell folks about us. We're growing, and it's because of you, and we absolutely appreciate that, all right? So with that, we're signing out of Wrestling Talk. And again, if you listen to the podcast, you will get the Three Count tomorrow. But if you're watching us live, you get it next, all right?
Vegas Bad Boys of Podcasting.